Welcome to my monthly podcast titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, and saging, or positive aging. I am passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring, but we're moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today, I'm interviewing Rachel Fried, whom I first encountered her writing on the Huffington Post. Now I own and reference several of her books and one of her workshops, and I attended one of her workshops at the Saging International Conference. Rachel was also one of the main keynote speakers. I also like to say I wish we were related, but we're not, because we spell our last name exactly the same way. And it's not a common name, and it's actually not a common way to spell it, F-R-E-E-D. So too many people want to spell it fried for me. But Rachel, welcome to the series.
Thank you so much, Jan, and I'm glad to share last names with you.
Yes, I'm honored to share the last name with you. Well, tell us, you know, you really, I wanted to just read one of your, in your own words, my beliefs and personal life path led me to legacy. It's my dream that we'll all find our voices and values, that will document our beliefs and blessings for a world in dire need of our wisdom, stories, and love. And you've authored many books, of which are on my bookshelf, one next to my bed right now, but Your Legacy Matters, Women's Lives, Women's Legacies, The Legacy Workbook for the Busy Woman, a monograph, My Financial Legacy. You also write monthly legacy tips and tools that, you know, someone can subscribe on your website. How did you come to develop this work?
Well, it's really kind of a weird tale. I was introduced to what's called the ethical will around 1994 or 5. And it was done by rabbis about 1,000 years ago who looked at the end of Genesis, where Jacob, the patriarch, was dying and he brings his 12 sons. Never mind that he doesn't bring his daughter, Dina. Yeah. Brings his 12 sons to him and blesses them and makes this dying wish that is, don't leave my bones down here in Egypt. Take them back to Canaan so that I can be with my ancestors for eternity. So about 1,000 years later, the rabbis looked at that and they said, well, what a perfect template for men to pass on the values of our culture to their sons. So I heard that and I thought, I was, of course, in the midst of my feminist naughtiness. And I said to myself, sure. Wait a minute here. I'm not a father and I'm not a son. I'm a mother. I have a son and I have a daughter and I have plenty to say to them. And what a great thing this is. So fast forward a couple of years, and I go to a summer Jewish study camp, and there's a different rabbi teaching the ethical will. So I go to listen to him, and I fall in love with it all over again, and I don't know why. In the meantime, I'm working as a therapist and working with cardiac families and have been for years. Anyway, So I fall in love with it, but I don't know why. And I begin to drop little pieces into a manila folder that I see that look like legacy to me. The following summer, I go back to that camp, same rabbi, teaching same class. I sign up for it again. I get to the door. He says, Rachel, what are you doing here? You already took this class. I said, well, you're a year different. I'm a year different. The people here will be all right. He says, come in. The third year, he just gave me a big hug and let me in the door. So I'm sitting there. It's a hot afternoon. We're in Beloit, Wisconsin, on campus in a classroom that it has no air conditioning, and the sun is beating down. It's August. People are falling asleep, and he's reading a poem to us, and I hear a voice in my head Now, I have never heard a voice before, and I've never heard one since. But this voice said, turn this into a healing tool for women. And I was like, what? So I raise my hand, extrovert that I am, and I report to the rabbi what I just heard in my head. And he points his finger at me and he says, do it. It's an important niche. So with that, my life changed. My work with cardiac families, I was no longer interested in. I was only interested in legacy. I was mad for it, impassioned by it. Mm-hmm. And I saw how important it was, particularly for people in the third and fourth quarters of their lives, and certainly for people who were ill and people who were dying, but also for younger people, because we don't know when our time is going to come, number one. Number two, we've got wisdom to pass on to our children from the time that the children are born. Mm-hmm. So I see it as...
Did you, yeah, there was some background noise, but that's okay. We'll keep going. I don't know what that was, but we'll keep going.
It was a text.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so I began to gather people that I knew in Minneapolis and where I live, and I put together a curriculum. I had been a teacher before I was a therapist, and I started to do workshops about legacy. And there was a lot of resistance, particularly women who said things like, well, I can't write, and if I could write, I don't have anything important to say. I just was a housewife. I just raised four children. I was like, oh, that's not important.
Right.
So in our patriarchal society, there was the resistance for women who I was trying to help give them their voice, for them to even have a sense that what they had to say was important and that it would live on beyond them. So then after I had run out of people that I could talk into doing this with me in Minneapolis, I wrote Women's Lives, Women's Legacies. And then I began to get invited to places, financial institutions, churches, synagogues, and I was doing workshops and loving it, and people were responding really well. And mostly they were women, and say I had 25 people in a workshop, two of them would be men, 23 would be women.
Mm-hmm.
Inevitably, mm-hmm. men would say, well, don't you like men? I would mm-hmm. say, I like men just fine. But this mission that I have is to give women their voices so that they can pass on their values, because women have not had their voices over the generations.
Mm-hmm.
So then fast forward a decade, and I had learned a lot, experienced a lot, knew a lot more about legacy, knew even more how important it was. And I decided it was time for another book, and a book that included men. So that's when I wrote Your Legacy Matters, which is for both genders and intergenerational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my history.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent book. That's one that I definitely refer to a lot. Why is legacy work an essential activity for all of us, especially, you know, elders?
Well, I think there's an urgency for us to address who we are and to come to peace with who we are, to know who we are first, and then to come to peace with that as we approach the end of our lives. And there's no better way, really, to focus on that than to look at what is it that I want to say to the people I love who will live beyond me. So there's this urgency sort of to make peace with yourself, which often may have amends or apologies or asking forgiveness in some legacy letters, but not all of them, certainly. But I was just writing this month's tips and tools, and I'm writing it about reading and how important reading is, particularly in this age when people say, oh, well, I have a tablet, or I can watch it on TV, or I can stream it, or I can this, that, or the other. There's something so magnificent about books. And I always read to my children and to my grandchildren, still am. Mm-hmm. And it's a value that I want to pass on. So if I don't write it down, I can't be sure that they're going to know that that's the blessing or the gift that I want to give them, the value that I want to pass on to them. So that's why it's important for us to do, and particularly as we begin to age, when we start to be more self-reflective and are making sense of our lives and wanting to leave a gift. And it's not even wanting. I can't quote it off the top of my head right now, but people have said, you know, elders deserve to be taken care of 100%, but it's not for free. You owe us something, and what you owe us is your wisdom.
I love that.
It's the responsibility of the elders to pass on what they've learned from the experience of life.
Yes.
So that's why I think it's urgent for elders, for sure.
Yes. Well, I'm writing that down because I like that a lot. Elders deserve to be taken care of, but we owe them wisdom from our life experience.
It's our responsibility to pass that on.
Mm-hmm. I'm writing that down.
Okay.
Yeah. that's excellent. Okay. So, you know, I know this is a short interview and you've written books on this topic, but what are the two elements of legacy writing? So, I mean, just kind of get us started.
Okay. So if we're going to be loyal to the original content of the ethical will, which, by the way, I don't use that word because nobody knows what an ethical will is, mm-hmm. but that's why I call them legacy letters. Mm-hmm. There were two components with Jacob in the beginning, and they were, one, to bless the children, and two, to pass on the death and dying wish that the elder, the dying person, might have. Mm-hmm. So those are the two components from the original. And I hold to that, although in an introductory workshop, we never get to the death and dying part. But I believe that two of the most important legacy letters we can write are a letter to accompany our advanced directive or our living will, and a letter to accompany our will, that was a little message to me that you were going to interview me at 2:00.
Okay. All right. So we have the advanced directive and then what?
And the will. So if you write a letter to accompany your advanced directive, you're doing several things, wonderful things, I think. The first one is that our advanced directives, our living wills, are usually a checkoff sort of, and they're a legal document. Mm-hmm. Legacy letters are not legal documents. Mm-hmm. So, however, if there's a difficulty and you don't have your voice anymore and you've got kids taking care of you and making decisions, final decisions about your life, and all they have is this little checklist, and they don't really know what it is you wanted at the end of your life, they don't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. And often they have difficulties. You know, one kid wants one thing and one kid wants another. And the parent who's dying, sort of left in the breach. So that's one important thing about writing that letter to accompany that. The other thing is that once you've written that letter, which, by the way, is not easy to write, it's not the first legacy letter I would suggest people write, mm-hmm. because it requires reflection and admitting our mortality, which is difficult in this society, this culture, which is so death-averse. Mm-hmm. So what I think that letter is also good for is to open conversation with the family.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to talk about dying as a normal thing that happens to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Kubler-Ross be damned, it's still a taboo in our culture to talk about dying.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult. And our kids don't want to hear it. My kids still don't want to. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want their mother to be old. They don't want me to be dying.
Right.
So they don't want to talk about it. But I did write a letter that accompanies my advance directive, and I have updated it over the years because I've changed my mind about a few things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so on. But anyway, that's a really important letter. And the same is true with this letter to go with your will. So many families break up, become estranged, hate each other, blah, 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 because of what was written in the will. They didn't think it was fair. Somebody got something they wanted. It makes for very difficult family relations. So if you can write a letter that explains why you did what you did.
Boy, that is critical.
Very critical. So those are two really important but difficult legacy letters to write. But to begin, I would say to begin is to celebrate life. So mm-hmm. maybe the first legacy letter that you write would be to celebrate a loved person's wedding or new job or a new baby or whatever, where you can express your love, where you can express your wishes for them going forward in the future, a softer kind of letter, an easier kind of letter to begin with. It's still your values,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the deepest, darkest
right.
of the values.
Yeah. Well, so, I actually want to follow that up because this is when I went through the saging training to be certified as a saging leader, I first learned about legacy letters. And that's been, well, at least it's probably been about 15 years ago. Yeah. And anyway, so I shared with you at the conference when I met you this fall that when I learned about legacy letters, I started writing one to each of my three sons on their birthdays. And while I did not, I don't call them legacy letters, but that's my mindset. I mean, I write it as if I got hit by a bus that day, you know, this is what I would want them to know. And as they've grown up from 15 to 30, you know, the focus of my message has changed because it needs to be age appropriate. And what's on my mind, as you said, you know, we change our minds. And so, but I didn't keep copies of these letters because I hand write them. And you suggested I should ask them for copies and, you know, because I really do think they keep them. What would I do with the copies or why should I mean, I can understand looking back at them, it would show growth for me. It would also show growth for them. But what would you suggest I do? I mean, like going forward, I will keep copies and I could probably get copies. But
well, yeah,
go ahead.
No, if they have them,
mm-hmm.
you should get a copy and you should, you know, make a copy of them and keep them in your own legacy file, if you
okay.
will.
Mm-hmm.
I also suggest that people make a copy online. Some people like to write online and then copy it in handwriting for the actual letter.
Okay.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You might write it by hand, as you were saying, and then put it on the computer. You know, well, I'll just give you an example of it. I wrote a letter to both of my kids about 5 years ago. It was a letter about a book that I was giving them. I put it in the book,
uh-huh.
in the front of the book. And it was a legacy letter of sorts. It told my values and it told why I was giving them the book that I was giving them and gave it to them. Okay. So now my daughter, this is a true story. My daughter's house burns down. Nobody's hurt, but the house is totally gone. With all the books and all the art and all the things that matter to them in it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So now she, not right away because there were certainly more important things, but about a year later after the fire, she called me one day and she said, Mom, I'm going to buy myself another copy of that book because I hadn't read it. But do you have a copy of the letter that went with it? I said, yes, I do. I have one on my computer. I'll make sure to get it to you the next time I see you. So, you know, that's a dramatic story. It doesn't happen every day, thank goodness.
No, right.
But it is a record. It is something that should be kept. And often, even if we think they're ready to read them, they may not be ready to read them. And when they get ready, they maybe can't find them.
So they can say,
Mom, you know, you wrote me a letter on my 40th birthday or my 30th birthday or on my wedding anniversary or whatever, and now I can't find it and I want it. Do you have a copy of it?
Yeah. No, that's excellent. Okay. I'm going to be working on that. So, that's good. Well, okay, Rachel, how do legacy writers use story? And tell us about the value of story, because that comes up over and over again in these interviews about people need to have the confidence and courage to share their story. And so tell us about that.
Okay, well, I try to make a point when I do workshops or do teaching or write, where I say that legacy writing is different than writing your story or writing your memoir or writing your spiritual autobiography or any other form that that may take. In legacy writing, we use stories to extract what we learned from the experience and then to translate that as a value that we want to pass forward. But people do learn from story, not from the didactic. You know, if you tell a story, people will remember it. If you tell them what to do, they're liable not to remember it, or at least ignore it.
No, right.
So I developed a very simple template, 4-paragraph template,
okay,
that people could use for a simple letter about one thing.
Okay.
Now, that's just one-page letter, okay?
Right.
And the 4 paragraphs are, the first paragraph is context, and I'll talk about that afterwards. The second is this sort of snapshot of your story, one little piece of your story. The third paragraph is what you learned from that experience, from that story. And the 4th paragraph is to bless whoever you're writing to, not just I love you or stay true to the family or anything, but a blessing that comes out of the learning that came out of the story, if that makes sense.
Well, could you give an example of that, or will you kind of walk through this again? Or
yeah, I will.
Okay.
But let me say something first about the 1st paragraph, which is context, which I added later. It was really three paragraphs, and then I added the 4th paragraph because someone, a wise person, a male person, said to me one day, there is no text without a context. And I thought, what the heck does that mean?
Yeah.
And I pondered on that for a while, and then I realized that, of course, we don't live in a vacuum. So I have my little story, my little paragraph of a story. And it takes place at a time and a place in our culture, in our world, that impinge on it, that have an effect on it. We don't live just us. We live in a large culture, and we live on a planet.
Mm-hmm.
So then I added the context first. So I'll give you an example. One of the letters that I use often when I'm teaching is a letter that I wrote about an experience that I had. Here's the story. When I was about 22, and my husband and I were living in New York, and I was looking for a teaching job. He was in the Coast Guard. And I got on the subway, and I had my book and I had my purse, and I sat down and I'm reading, and all of a sudden a pregnant homeless woman walks into the car with 2 big sacks. She sets down the sacks and she starts ranting about giving money. And I look down at my book and I hold on to my purse and I'm thinking, oh, how long will this go on? When will she go away? And all of a sudden she says, I don't care if you don't give me money, but you should look me in the eye. I'm a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I felt so ashamed of myself and was so shocked by the experience. Meanwhile, she's picked up the bags and gone on to the next car.
Mm-hmm.
But I remembered that for a long time. So when I started doing legacy writing, I don't have to go into it, we don't have enough time, but that memory was triggered by something that I read by another woman who was talking about her daughter teaching her to look at people, look directly in people's eyes. And I remembered that 30, 40 years later, that when I was 22, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I write the context of here, your father and I are in New York. We're 22 and 23 years old, and it's civil rights time. It's 61. And I have one little paragraph, and I give them a whole bunch of information that we would never sit down and talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But in a paragraph, I can give them a snapshot of what the larger context of who I was when I was 22.
Yeah, absolutely.
But,
yeah.
Okay, so that's the context.
Yeah.
And I tell this little story about being in the subway and being ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third paragraph is the lesson that I learned, which was to look people in the face. Because when I do, they feel more human and I feel more human.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lesson from the story.
Right.
Okay. And then I closed with a blessing, wishing them both to have wise and compassionate eyes for themselves and for each other and for everyone on the planet.
Mm.
So that the blessing matched what I was talking about. It wasn't just some gobbledygook, you know, well,
right,
you're supposed
right.
to finish the blessing. So that's an example, and it's all in one page of paper.
That's an excellent example. Excellent. You know, and like you said, upon hearing this, it sounds like it's going to take a lot of time. It doesn't, especially if you have kind of this template in mind. And like I said, I tend to do it on their birthdays. So that tends to be a regular tradition. And it's interesting because they don't really mention it to me, but I know that they get it because there's always a check in there that they cash. So so I know they're opening it and I know that they receive it, but they don't,
yep.
they don't really, you know, they don't really talk about it, but, and I really do think they keep them. So I will have to get copies. Well, Rachel, this is so rich that we're running out of time here. So I want to ask you, you know, given your life experience in this and how you are so passionate about this topic, and I actually love and appreciate your work, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know? Because, you know, what do you want to leave them with? What do you want them to remember most?
Well, what I want them to remember most is that they get something out of this writing as well as the people who receive their letters.
Mm-hmm.
For the people that receive the letters, they're treasures that they will keep long after we're gone. So that's a legacy that you know, keeps us alive in some way, maybe 50, 60, 100 years from now when they pull out these letters and say, this is what my great-great-grandmother wrote to me or wrote to my great-great-grandson or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that part. But the other part is that it addresses needs that we have that we're not even aware of, universal but unconscious needs that we all have, which are to be connected and to be known, to belong, to bless and be blessed, to celebrate life, to make a difference in the world. All those things are addressed. Now, not completely, obviously, from a legacy letter.
Mm-hmm.
But they do address those things that we need for ourselves so that we're getting something out of it as well as giving something that has immeasurable worth for those people that we write to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know when I write these letters, I know that it really, it matters to me Because again, we live in a very busy world, and for them to sit down and listen to me, you know, then it comes off as a lecture, because as a former professor, you know, they're always like, we're not one of your students, Mom, you know, but when I write it, you know, I think it comes off more, and then they can, you know, they have the value of reading it again and again and again, you know?
Yep.
So, Rachel, this has been wonderful. So the emphasis in this podcast series is to make the rest of life the best of life. And I think all of us should start thinking about how are we passing on our values and beliefs that are most important to us.
Absolutely.
So, thank you very much, Rachel. Take care.
And I'll keep you too, Jan.
You know, I wanted to say, you know, for more information on Rachel, please refer to the bio attached to this podcast. You can sign up for her newsletter. I find that very informative. And, you know, I would say start doing this work.
Thank you so much, Jan. It's been just a delight to be with you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.